No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds. Good evening, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Jess Root from Revenge of the Birds Radio, and we are here tonight brought to you by Audible.com, and tonight is the beginning of, well, kind of the first big news that we've had. We had a show recently about, well, we've had Larry Fitzgerald on the show. We talked about things leading into free agent, and tonight we begin our show on free agency, as the Arizona Cardinals have completed, and the rest of the league, have completed their first week of the new league year, the beginning of free agency, with the league having a lot of money, as there is lots of money added to the salary cap, about $10 million added for every team. So even teams who had cap problems suddenly found themselves with the money to burn, and it's been tossed around a little bit, and we're going to talk about what the Arizona Cardinals have done. We have on the show tonight Seth Cox, as we always do. Thanks for coming on, Seth. How are you doing tonight? Seth, are you there?
Good.
Good.
All right.
Technical difficulties for a second. Hold on 1 second.
All right. Well, Cardinals fans, we're here, as we've been talking about. We'll be talking about the offseason. We're going to be talking about the moves. We're going to talk about all the different moves that we've done, that we've had, that we've seen by the Arizona Cardinals, the free agents they lost, the free agents they gained. We're going to talk about what our favorites are, our reactions. We're going to go over the contracts that have been doled out. We're going to give each move a grade. And we're going to take a look at how that might affect the playing time, the starting lineups. And then, well, since we're still not done with free agency, what moves could yet be in the future? While Seth gets set here, I'll go over what we know so far. Since the beginning of free agency, the Cardinals suffered basically three losses. They lost Carlos Dansby, who signed a four-year, $24 million contract with the Cleveland Browns, including $14 million guaranteed. They lost wide receiver Andre Roberts, who is actually one of the very first free agents to actually ink a deal or come to terms with their team, as he signed a deal with the Washington Redskins worth $16 million over four seasons with $8 million guaranteed. So Cardinals lost a couple of contributors, Roberts, who kind of had lost his playing time, lost his spot in rotation due to, one, Mike Floyd and Larry Fitzgerald playing well, and then the emergence of the Bruce Arians using the two tight end system. They also lost tight end Jim Dre, who also signed with the Cleveland Browns. So basically three losses, and then we're going to go over the signings that they've had in just a moment, but it sounds like that we got Seth on the line now. Seth, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Jess. How are you?
Doing all right. So, exciting week, right, for football. Finally, the floodgates are open, and then there's lots of money everywhere is kind of how it seems.
Yeah, I mean, everything kind of went quickly, and now this is where the good GMs, and something we saw with Steve Keim last year, is this is where the good GMs will really make their money and make some moves that'll pay off. You know, you saw Carlos Dansby at this time last year. Around the second wave of free agents, and then you had the John Abraham and Eric Winston. So we'll see what happens with the second wave, because I think that's still going to be more important. Outside of the Valdir signing that we'll talk about, but I think the second wave can actually have some more importance than kind of the names they brought in outside of Valdir.
Well, and let's get started with that. So we mentioned the three players that have left the Cardinals. So Carlos Dansby is now Cleveland Brown, Andre Roberts of Washington Redskin, Jim Dre, who I thought probably would return, did not return, ended up going to the Browns. we actually had our first move the Cardinals made in terms of re-signing was actually a few weeks ago as they locked up Dave Zastadil, our punter, for a couple of more seasons, re-signed him. Then before free agency began, they agreed to terms with tight end John Carlson, who had been cut by the Minnesota Vikings. They inked him to a 2-year deal. Then these are kind of things that have happened since then. They grabbed their franchise left tackle that they had hoped to do. They got Jared Verdier, who was not franchised by the Oakland Raiders, and they locked him up for 5 years, $35 million, despite all the rumors that had been going around about Brandon Albert this and Brandon Albert that. Turned out that he was dead set on going to Miami, got the money he wanted, got the team he wanted, and then the Cardinals, luckily, due to some bungling by the Oakland Raiders, as some will say, that got him. So they picked up Vera Valdera for 5 seasons. They picked up John Carlson for 2 seasons. Then they made some smaller moves. They did some re-signings. They re-signed kicker Jay Feely, for one more season. Brought him back for one more year with some competition. And they've already got Danny Ratman, a really young young kicker with a good leg. They're going to compete in camp, those two. They re-signed Jake Ballard, another tight end that they had last season. He was a restricted free agent. However, they did not tender him, and they re-signed him for less than what the tender amount would have been. They brought back defensive lineman Frosty Rucker for 2 seasons. They re-signed linebacker Matt Shaughnessy for 2 seasons. Interestingly enough, he actually headed out of town. He was in New England for a visit, and he decided to still agree to terms with the Cardinals. Linebacker Marcus Bernard, also who was a restricted free agent, was not tendered. He was brought back for 1 season. Then, in some other lower key moves, they also signed Ted Larson, a veteran offensive lineman, plays center and guard on a 2-year contract. They also signed veteran running back Jonathan Dwyer, former Pittsburgh Steeler, a guy that Arians knows, for 1-year contract. And from there, that we've kind of got run the gamut of everything that they've done. And then the kind of the bigger one, the one they tossed around a little bit of money there, was to receiver Ted Ginn, whom they signed for 3 seasons. And then we have one last pending offer that we don't know what's going to happen is cornerback Antonio Cromartie, who came to town for a visit. We don't know if he's still in town mulling things over, but he came to town for a visit. There was a little Twitter exchange, as we noted on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, between he and Patrick Peterson, making it seem like that Cromartie was going to get locked up here, only to have the tweet deleted. And then a Pro Football Talk report, which also came out and said that a source close to them and close to the situation said that there was nothing happening between the Cardinals and Cromartie at this point. So that's the deals we got. They lost 3 players. They signed a whole bunch. And in kind of nice manner, Seth, react. What are your overall reactions to what the Cardinals did with general manager Steve Kime pulled over the last week?
You know, I think it starts with the Valdir signing, kind of trickles down from there. They, you know, they had to get a left tackle. You and I talked about it on kind of our free agency preview that everybody I talked to, you know, had told me the only name I'd been able to get out of anybody was Brandon Albert, and now we kind of know why. They were tight-lipped on Valdir for a couple reasons. One, because obviously he wasn't really in play until I think it was Saturday when he was not franchised, or Friday, so they're not going to let that get out that's, you know, their alleged top target, and you know, for whatever it's worth, I think he probably was their either 1A or 1B plan. I think Albert probably was 1A, and you know, they realized very quickly they wouldn't be able to pay him, so they moved right on, which is smart. From there, you know, you kind of work your way towards the loss of Dansby, and I posed the question on Twitter, you know, does the addition of Valdir offset the loss of Dansby on defense? And that's a question we have to ask, because for all the talk of how much better this offense is going to be next year, and it should be, you have to wonder, does the defense take a step back? And as Kent Hoder had said, he's a writer, you know, and for you and on Twitter, and he said it, you know, you just don't replace an all-pro. No matter how good Minter ends up being, and I think he's going to be good. You just don't replace an all-pro like that. And so that's the question, is how much of a step back, if any, do they take on defense? I think right now a lot of us see them taking a small step back until we get to actually see Minter in action and can tell what he's actually going to do. From there, Andre Roberts, you know, paying him $4 million a year was out of the question, especially when you can get a guy like Ted Ginn for 3.25. And, you know, I kind of joked about it on Twitter, but they really paid Ted Ginn, the return man, $2 million and Ted Ginn, the wide receiver, $1.25 million because he's really has never been a great wide receiver. He's a deep threat that drops the ball too often and had his best statistical year as a wide receiver last year in Carolina, so maybe that carries over. Maybe he's kind of finally honing his craft in year 8 of his career, so that's, you know, that's something to watch. But I think overall, you know, you and I talked about it, Shaughnessy and Rucker were big re-signs. Ballard was a good re-signing. Did Carlson sign before we talked last time?
Yes, it came basically on just before. I think so. I think it came just before everything went down.
It's a good signing. It's just because they're going to be able to get out of it so easily if they need to, which is what really mattered to me in that signing because of his concussions and how much he just absolutely can't stay healthy the last couple of years. That's what really is, you know, kind of big on that one, because he needs to stay healthy, and if he can't stay healthy, then you cut him and move on. Outside of that, Jonathan Dwyer does absolutely nothing for me. So I think that was just a comfort level for Arians to bring in a guy that's a veteran that he knows what he's getting into. So I think that's how I feel about that one for now. And, you know, I think that's really it right now. I don't really have any strong opinions on Marcus Bernard or anything else. You know, the loss of Jim Dre, you know, I think it's kind of a wash, so...
Well, and for me, overall, is you kind of get the picture of how Steve Keim's going about business, and they really over the past two seasons, and I will go over the contracts in a bit, but I put together a piece a few days ago. It was Thursday, and I put together, look at the contracts that Steve Keim has put together, and his approach has been, all right, there's a couple of guys last year that there were three guys that he brought from elsewhere on 3-year deals. He re-signed Rashad Johnson for 3 years, brought in Lorenzo Alexander, Jerrod Powers, and Drew Stanton. Those are the guys they meant more than 2 years. Everyone else is 1 or 2 year deals. Obviously, the big deal is Veldheer. He got for 5 years, and that's one of those things is. And really, what I really like about the moves is they met almost all of their so-called needs or the holes that they have in on their team, allowing them to do not feel. Like they have to go a specific way in the draft, which is kind of how you do it. And they picked up a couple of guys that they can make a start. They re-signed guys that were key to them as well, and they bring in depth. And they put themselves – what I've been most impressed with is because they have a lot of youth on the team, and I know that they're going to count on their youth. They want their youth, their young players, their second-year players, guys like Stephon Taylor, they want to step up. I know they want Earl Watford to step up. And where you have some little bit of uncertainty with Tyrann Mathieu and his injury, and perhaps a little bit on Jonathan Cooper and his return, although things appear to be going well in his rehab right now. But they put themselves in a wonderful position that because they want to win now, they are no longer making, they're no longer having to rely on those young players to produce. They have a backup plan. If they end up winning the start of the rotation battles, the positional battles, that's great. That's what they hope happens. But they're not stuck in a position where if one of these players disappoints, that they're still going to have to run them out in the field. And that's what I've liked so much thus far is that, okay, they're really intrigued about Earl Watford. They think really highly of Stephon Taylor. But what they do, they bring in guys that they know can do the job and that can step in that doesn't allow those young players to be complacent and to think, hey, I've made it. And that, along with them, they're just filling holes here, right and left on these deals and depth. And I really, really like I like the game plan of going about that so that you can, in the end, pick up the best talent that you feel is the greatest talent on the board when you have your spots in the draft.
Well, and to kind of piggyback on that, and something that I tweeted out last week was none of what they've done in free agency changes their draft plans at all. And we looked at it last year. I mean, they signed Paul Fonseca, drafted Jonathan Cooper and Earl Watford. They signed Gerard Powers. They drafted Tyrann Mathieu. They drafted Kevin Minter and then signed Carlos Dansby. They don't care about who they're in free agency. They're going to, as you said, take the best player available. There's different ways, and SB Nation had a great article on it, something I've talked about before on Revenge of the Birds, but there's two types of ways people draft. There's the true best player available, which is what it seems the Cardinals do, which is a player, regardless of position, will be drafted based on what we what we grade him at. And then there's this idea of tiers or kind of a fluidity, like horizontal board, where you say, okay, a player A has a higher grade than player B, but player B plays a more important position, so I'm going to put him in front of player A. And it's not necessarily as drastic as the Levi Brown, Jordan Peterson thing we always get, but it's more of can you get the same kind of talent the next round? Are you able, can this person that you're going to draft compete with the talent you already have? For instance, if Carlos Dansby had been with the Cardinals last year and the Cardinals drafted in a horizontal board, would Kevin Minter have been picked? Because would they have seen that as Minter being able to compete with Dansby in Washington in that situation? I say yes, because we see that they're just very much, okay, this is how our board lines up. This is who we're drafting at this point. So, somebody asked me, does this mean the Cardinals aren't going to draft a wide receiver? Absolutely not. I mean, I don't see any reason why it would stop them from drafting a wide receiver. Ted Ginn has never been a great wide receiver. I mean, that's one of the things that I went back and looked at some of the comments on Revenge of the Birds that Cardinals fans made about Ginn when he was a 49er, and they're hilarious to look at. I mean, just and it just brings to light that he's never been a great wide receiver, and he probably won't ever be a great wide receiver, but he can be a complimentary number three, or even better, a number four that just gets on the field and stretches plays. Because you signed Veldier doesn't mean you're not going to draft a guy that's a tackle, especially if somebody like, say, Taylor Lewan falls to 20. You're not going to not draft Taylor Lewan. You're going to draft the best player. And if they have Lewan as the top player on their board, well, they'll make Veldier and Lewan fit on the line together, and that's what they'll do. So it doesn't change the draft philosophy, and I think that's one of the things that we need to look at going forward, because it's going to be important in how we kind of try to figure out what Steve Keim and Bruce Arians want to do come draft day.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. That's Seth Cox. This is Jess Root. And you can give us a call, give us your thoughts by calling in at 646-478-3787. That's 646-478-3787. And this portion of the program, we're talking Arizona Cardinals free agency, is brought to you by audible.com. And if you want to, now, what we can do, get you guys, is you can get yourself online and sign up and get a free audiobook through audible.com by going to audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. Pick yourself up if you're into reading, all sorts of topics and discussions and titles. They have thousands of titles on audible.com. It's an Amazon company. Pick yourself up, download, sign up for the trial, get yourself your free audiobook that you can take anywhere that you want. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. That's audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. As we move on forward, we keep on going here with our free agency show. We've been talking about the overall moves. We're going to talk about the losses, the three losses they had so far. And there are some other players that have gone unsigned so far, but they haven't gone anywhere. We've got Carlos Dansby, you've got Andre Roberts, and you've got Jim Dre. Let's talk Carlos Dansby specifically. I've been fairly clear on my take. I wanted them to re-sign Dansby. I understand why they let him go. Obviously, it would have been unwise for the team to sign Dansby for four seasons at that kind of money, $14 million guaranteed. However, $14 million guaranteed is the amount that I was willing to give him in 2 years, which is basically what it is. He's got $14 million coming to him guaranteed, and I get that Kevin Minter is potentially special, is a good player, that he can do a really good job. And I think I've kind of softened my stance a little bit, because one thing I forgot to consider is that of Todd Bowles and his ability to scheme around the players. Now, while I do not discount the players around Dansby for his season, he's been pretty consistent with his numbers. And I think that his loss is going to be a blow to the defense on a couple of levels. Yes, as we heard on an interview recently on Arizona Sports on Fox Sports Radio 910, I have the article, I have both audio files there on Revenge of the Birds, and we already know Carlos Dansby he speaks highly of self. He will self-aggrandize at any opportunity. However, if you'll notice something, that the players on that team rallied around him. The part where he talked about breathing life into the team, I believe that. Lorenzo Alexander described him as irreplaceable in the locker room. Darnell Dockett clearly upset that he left. Larry Fitzgerald, when I talked to him on the show the other day, said that that's a big void, not only for the player, but for the man, for the leader. Because he was motivated to be the best player himself, his motivation to be the best player on the field, in his mind, caused him to work super hard, which caused the other players around him to be motivated to work hard. And they're going to miss that unless they have someone else who can breathe, that continue with that thought that, hey, he thinks real highly of himself. He believes he can stop Rangori, he can stop Marshawn Lynch, he can run with Colin Kaepernick, he can run with Russell Wilson. And he worked out as such, and that rallied the team around him. They started doing the same thing, showing up in the weight room, and they train harder. They believe they can win, and they did win. I get why he left, and I wish that he hadn't. However, knowing that, I do think that, and I said it before on a couple of other shows, I wrote about it, I believe that that loss will be a bigger impact than people think. While the defense is solid, the combination of Washington and Dansby to me was potentially special. And when you have a team that wants to win now, you want that special play in the middle of the field to be there to make your defense elite. Kevin Minter and Darrell Washington very well may be a very good combo. I don't think in first year that they will be special, and I don't know if they would be a special combination at any point in their career. And so I think that takes a step back, although I will, thinking about how the loss that they suffered outside linebacker, how we saw the rules change when you had Matt Shaughnessy and John Abraham then basically doing full time at those positions, how their rules changed and Todd Bowles adjusted to that, to the talent on the field, and things improved even from the beginning of the season. So while I believe that that loss will be felt, hopefully they can be made up by play in other parts of the field, or the fact that they fill some of their holes, they get more physical, or that the offense itself is placed better. Give us your one last take on Dansby. Should they have brought him back, and what impact will his loss have on the team?
Well, you kind of hit the nail on the head last time we talked about his importance to this team, And I, you know, I think you're right, and I think, you know, the problem is we've never seen Dan or Minter play. So I know we've seen him in preseason in college and so on, but the speed of a regular season NFL game, we've just never seen him there. So that's a concern that everybody has to take into play. No matter how great Todd Bowles' scheme is, there are great offensive minds that can out-scheme his schemes. And we saw that last year. We saw that with the tight end situation, trying to defend it. We saw that in San Francisco, you know, beating them at home in the final game of the season. That's something that we've seen before. So if Minter is a liability, then that'll get picked on. So that's something that is a legitimate worry. And, you kind of, like I said, hit the nail on the head. If you're going all in, quote unquote, if you're doing this as much as possible, then money, you know, while it's an object in theory, it should be no object because you're going for broke, so to speak. I mean, you're pushing guaranteed monies back for other players. You're sacrificing money. You're sacrificing money down the line. I mean, look at the Veldier contract. They're sacrificing money in 15, 16, 17 when they're going to need to re-sign guys like Patrick Peterson, and if they have to franchise him 1 year, Michael Floyd, Jonathan Cooper. This entire last draft class is up in 16, so they're going to have to pay all those guys, and all that money they're just continually pushing back. So that all comes to a head eventually. So why not just make it worse is my thought, and kind of, you know, really, truly go all in. I'm in the end, it's one player on the defense in a 3-4 defense where I'm guessing, and I don't know anything, but I'm guessing that they're going to use the hammer situation with Minter to start, and they're going to let Washington play more closely the way he played in the Horton scheme, and that'll be how that ends up for the first couple games until, well, hopefully Dansby or Washington's there, but in the first couple games, while Bowles figures out, you know, what Minter can truly do in a live NFL game.
And the point about going all in, I guess a team that we're seeing really go all in, we're actually seeing two teams kind of do that, is you have an AFC arms race between the Broncos and the Patriots. And here they've got their quarterbacks that have seen their glory days, and they're at the end of their career, they're elite players. And so they're going all in, but Denver seemingly playing in Madden franchise mode with no salary cap, with the players that they're signing, even the players that they didn't sign, as they offered Dominic Rogers Cromartie $9 million a year, and he turned it down. To pick up DeMarcus Ware, you're seeing these teams, hey, they have a year or two window. The Cardinals aren't quite that drastic, because they still are trying to build for the future, but they know they have a couple-year window right now when, with the defense the way it's playing, and they have a good enough or a better-than-average quarterback in Carson Palmer, a veteran player who can do it, and they're trying to win now. And so that's the one move that I hope doesn't bite them in the butt, where they take enough of a step backwards defensively. The other players that we lost, Andre Roberts, it's really, to me, inconsequential. He's a nice player, but because you already have Larry Fitzgerald, because you already have Michael Floyd, and because that third receiver does not get a whole lot of burn, say, on the field, and especially with the potential emergence of even more Andre Ellington coming out of the backfield, lining up as a receiver, between Ellington and the fact that Arians just plain wants a guy that can run down the field fast. And while Andre Roberts is fast, he is not that burner. He does kind of fit, as one of the articles you wrote about the wide receiver profile, he kind of fits that. He's a little, not quite as fast as what I think he ran, a 4.5, I think what is, or just under 4.5 when he was coming out of the end of the draft. But he fits that mold, but he's not quite as fast as what Arians wants. And that's, they basically swapped him out for a little bit cheaper player in Ted Ginn, who's a little more versatile and has that burner speed. Jim Dre, likewise, I'm surprised a little bit. I'm not terribly surprised, but I thought he would be back because he was such a reliable player. I know he wasn't fantastic at any particular phase of the game. He got himself a decent contract here for Cleveland. But the situation they had at tight end, I thought they would bring him back. Because he was reliable, they do have, as of right now, a whole bunch of high-risk players. Rob Housler, who is high reward but really hasn't done much. You've got John Carlson, who now has injury issues. You've got Jake Ballard. Hopefully his knee holds up. And then you've got a slew of unproven players who haven't even caught the field. You've got Darren Fells. You've got Andre. You got Kid Brackett, Andre Hardy, a bunch of real athletic players who potentially could do something, but you really can't count on. Talk about Robertson and Dre. You see any impact either way to their departure?
No, and that kind of goes back to what we talked about with the Ginn thing. I think Roberts, they didn't have any interest in re-signing him because he didn't really fit what Arians wanted in terms of, you know, that quote-unquote third wide receiver or that, you know, potential to take over for Larry Fitzgerald if things don't work out this year or whatever. So I think that was just kind of that idea right there, is that they were just going to let him go and see what kind of money he got. I think if he wouldn't have gotten $16 million from Washington, I think if, you know, it was May and after the draft and, you know, he was still hanging out on the free agent market, I think they probably would have put, you know, a call in and seen, you know, kick the tires a little bit. But it never happened. It didn't need to happen. And now, you know, we're kind of done with that era. Jim Dre, for a guy that doesn't move like a, you know, a split-out tight end, he sure doesn't block like an inline tight end. So I wasn't, you know, too beat up about the fact that he's gone. He's basically a healthy, poor man's John Carlson, if you will. So I think it actually, you know, you upgraded because I think Carlson's the better player, but again, it
definitely has a higher upside.
Yeah, and it's just all about health with Carlson. So they're similar in blocking and things of that nature. Carlson's probably a slightly better blocker and more athletic, but it's just, you know, I think the Cardinals replaced the losses outside of Dansby with better players than what they lost, in my opinion. And who knows, maybe Roberts is a great number two wide receiver in Washington and, you know, the Cardinals end up regretting that, but I just don't see it coming to fruition, so I'm not too concerned about it.
It actually really surprises me, being that Roberts ended up being the first receiver off the board, which that really was surprising because the talk was, well, that's kind of a bummer of a year. He might have to take a one-year deal, prove-it mode to then cash in next year. And then he got the Steve Breston treatment, really, who in Breston it was even more proven after that 1,000-plus yard season with Warner and Bold and Fitz. And Roberts got very similar money. He got 4 years, $16 million. Breston ended up getting 5 years, $25 million, that was, after 2009. And with $5 million guaranteed, or $9 million guaranteed. So it was a little bit more guaranteed, a little bit longer deal. But Roberts really, considering the year that he had last year compared to, yeah, he had a decent, he was probably the most productive receiver overall that they had in 2012. I was shocked he ended up being the first receiver off the board and to get the deal that he did. Apparently, Washington sees something in him that they like, paired up with, you know, with Pierre Garçon.
Well, and you look at just the free agencies, I mean, and for those of you that don't know, and if you've listened to this, you probably do know, but rotoworld.com has a great NFL free agency list, and on top of that, it shows you all the contracts that these guys sign that and leaves the list up. So you go and look at it, and Roberts was their 10th ranked wide receiver on the market, and he signed for less than the 11th, 12th, and those type of guys. So, you know, I think it ends up being he kind of came at a discount in the end based on what other receivers were getting paid this year. You know, you look at somebody like Golden Tate, I don't think Roberts is quite as dynamic in the open field as Golden Tate, but he got a 5-year, $31 million deal from Detroit. So he basically got one more year, but double the money. So I think they went aggressively after Roberts and put a big number on the table early, and that's what made him sign. And then the other numbers came out, and it was like, well, maybe I didn't get as much as I could have, because you look at a guy like Riley Cooper got 525 in Philadelphia, and I mean, I think while they're different types of wide receivers, give me Roberts over Cooper, you know, every day. So,
well, let's look again. We're talking at Arizona Cardinals free agency. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and you can give us a call at 646-478-3787 to call in, give you your questions, your comments, your takes on the moves Arizona Cardinals have made. And again, this portion of the show, like the rest of the show, is brought to you by Audible.com, where you can head to audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds, sign up for a free trial, and pick up yourself a free audiobook. Again, audibletrial.com/Revenge of the Birds. As we move on to the next section of the program, we're going to talk about, just real quick, your favorite edition, your least favorite edition, and kind of explain that. Seth, of the moves they made, what's your favorite move that they've done thus far of the players they've signed?
I think Valdez is kind of the cheap way to go, and everybody's going to say that. So while he's my favorite addition, I'll go a different route, and I'll say the re-signing of Matt Shaughnessy. I really like that. I thought it was important to the continuation of the defense, something we talked about in the free-agency preview. This defense was so good against the run last year, and he was a massive reason why. So I think getting him for 2 years was just a really good pickup, and he's cheap, and you're going to see him be effective in the defense even more so. And I like that signing. Yes, I think Valdir was the best signing, but I liked the re-signing of Matt Shaughnessy.
And I'll go kind of the same route. Obviously, Valdir is the easy answer. That were they able to pick up their potential franchise left tackle, a guy that's, aside from the little bit of uncertainty coming off that triceps injury, he did play in the last 5 games, but you have a guy who's played well, who was, some might argue, you could make the argument that he perhaps was the best guy out there on the market, and you got him for a reasonably good deal. But I'm going to go different directions. I guess we're kind of our favorite move outside of Valdir, because obviously a guy that if you could pick up your franchise left tackle in free agency for a pretty decent deal, you've done yourself a favor. I'm going to go different directions than Shaughnessy. I'm going to say Frosty Rucker, simply because while Shaughnessy, yes, is a key part of that rush defense, it also puts a little bit of interesting, because there were so many outside linebackers, they're already on the roster. And you have guys like, well, you've got Alex Okafor. They want to see what he's got. You've got Sam Acho and Lorenzo Alexander. While we didn't get to see much of both, well, I know that Alexander was playing very well against the run to start the season before he hurt his foot. Sam Acho, that's kind of what they were doing. They were playing well against the run, and then they bring in the passing package where they got Shaughnessy on one side and Abraham on the other. Ended up being that Abraham played a lot more. Samson became much more effective player. Bringing back Shaughnessy does kind of put a glut there at the position. But what I love about the Frosty Rucker is because he is a starting caliber player. I mean, he did start every game a couple of seasons ago in Cleveland. He's a guy who is talented at the start. He's a veteran guy. As Larry Fitzgerald said, he's a glue guy. He's a guy you have to have in your locker room because he fits in with lots of groups. He holds players accountable. They respect him. But more importantly, the continuity, as we've talked about before, and the fact that you need depth and powerful physical depth on the defensive line. And they became a five-man rotation, essentially, on that defensive line last year, where you had basically the two-headed monster for just a few snaps each between Alameda Ta'amu and Dan Williams. Then you had, at the other positions, you'd have Rucker, Dockett, and Calais Campbell. And you needed that because he's a professional. He's going to give you production. He's not Vonnie Holiday. Vonnie Holiday, who'd get in for four or five snaps here or there and then had the one good game. He's more than just the veteran presence. He is a productive player. So I like the Shaughnessy move, and I really like the Frosty Rucker move as well. Tell us about your least favorite addition. What's the least favorite move that you've seen from the Cardinals so far?
It's a tie right now between Dwyer, because I feel like it's just a cop-out for Arians, as far as the running back position going. Like, look, hey, we got another running back, so there's that. And I've said my piece on Stephon Taylor. I like him. I think he's a good grinded out back, but he's going to need 18-plus carries, which he's not going to get in this offense, so why find somebody similar in Dwyer? But the other one was Ted Larson, simply because, and this is something I talked about on the article you wrote, he wasn't very good at guard, and that concerns me, because, and I talked about this on Twitter, if you're bringing him in to play center and compete with Lyle Cinnaline at center, which I don't think he is, then I'm fine with that. But if you're bringing him in to compete with Watford, like you kind of talked about on the show opening, or kind of talked about when you're talking about just the moves in general that you like, that concerns me, because he was just so bad as a guard in Tampa Bay. You go back and you look at it, and it was just it wasn't pretty. I watched some games from the 2012 season, and it's kind of night and day, him playing right guard versus him playing center. In the first five games, I think it was, and in the last nine games he started at center, and he was much better player. So that's one of the things I didn't like, and the reason why is simple, is because I don't see the point in spending that kind of cap space in something that you already have, unless he's just a swing man backup between guard, center, guard type thing. So,
I see what you mean there. I already said I think that he will end up being the Mike Gibson of this team. But he's insurance, and obviously he wasn't great at his guard. And he's played left guard and right guard, so he's a little bit versatile there. But, yeah, looking back at 2012 when he was playing right guard, it wasn't particularly pretty. But then again, neither was Paul Fonseca. And Fonseca doesn't quite provide you with the versatility where, even if Larson ends up being the starter, he still can be the backup center, much like they had a couple years ago. Who was the guy? I don't remember, but he's the guy
that...
No. He was before him. He was the guy that replaced Deuce. I can't remember his name now. Oh, he used to be played was on the Chargers, I believe, previous.
Oh, Rich Ortenberger.
Nope, not him. It was
even farther back.
Oh yeah, it was like 2010, 2011, and it went from Deuce at right guard to dang. I'm gonna have to lift that thing go because I can't remember. Because it was.
I'll find it. You just.
They let him go to bring in Adam Snyder is what it ended up being. He was a vet guy, but he was their backup center as well. I see him as being as the Mike Gibson of the year, with the potential insurance that he could step in should he be better. Should he end up being better than Fonseca or Watford? My least favorite move, and I'm kind of on the other side. I'm okay with Dwyer. I totally expected a veteran running back. I said it before. I wrote about it, and people are like, nah, you don't need to. I expected a veteran running back to come in, and I don't know that he's going to get a whole lot of playing time. I think he will end up getting playing time because he's an Arians guy. But bringing in Dwyer is just what you needed to have someone to push Stephon Taylor, just to give him a little competition. That way, if Stephon Taylor isn't, that you know what you have in Dwyer. And hopefully Andre Ellington's getting enough touches anyway. And he's got that veteran guy in the locker room, so you have the leader in the running back room. Because I don't think that there's enough. Well, obviously, I don't think Ryan Williams has the credentials, has the reputation, has really the credibility in the running back room as being a guy to be a leader, as he's only gotten – he didn't play at all. He didn't even suit up last year, and he's got only a handful of games under his belt. Andre Ellington, Stephon Taylor, second-year players, and while they are expected to make big contributions, they're still not – they really don't have the presence to be the leaders there. And that's where Rashard Mendenhall, aside from his lack thereof of production on the field, he was really good for that group. And bringing in Dwyer, who's a guy that Arians is familiar with, I like the move. I don't expect him to be a huge contributor. He is what he is. And to provide a little bit of push for Stephon Taylor and that presence. I think my least favorite move is actually the bringing in John Carlson. And should the Cardinals bring in Antonio Cromartie, I don't know what I should think about that yet, because it might be my least favorite move, depending on the money that it goes into that, if they do indeed sign him, because Cromartie you've talked about this, he's really inconsistent. Like, his good can be pretty dang good. I mean, he shows flashes of elite cover talent, but then when he's bad, he's terrible. So he's got a higher upside than John Powers, but the same kind of low that you have, and also the reputation of not being a guy that you can count on in run support. So while you do have the potential there to improve there at the position, depending on the money that he's going to be looking for, I don't know if I love that. But I'm going to say John Carlson just because of the fact, and I'm glad that they got him for almost nothing risk-wise. It was $100,000 guaranteed. $100,000 signing bonus. So if they end up cutting him, you burn $100,000 of dead money or $50,000 the next year. It's because he's essentially, to me, the same player as Rob Housler. He's a guy that hasn't quite put it all together. He has injury issues, in Housler's issue, he gets hurt and he comes back and takes a step back. Carlson's kind of the same type of player, and why you end up in a position where you want to get more reliable. I wasn't thrilled. I mean, it's an okay move, but when you have now a room full of risky players, per se, Housler, who hasn't put it all together, you got Carlson with his injuries, you got Jake Ballard, who was out of football for a year and, you know, just barely coming back, and hopefully his knee can hold up, and then you've got a whole bunch of these young kids who had barely played the position one or just haven't been in the league. I was hoping to see a little bit more stability there from the position.
Well, and I can say this, and this is kind of going into draft talk, but we'll get to that later. But this tight end group is really talented, in my opinion. So I think in round one, in round two, in round three, you can get a guy that can come in and maybe replace Housler. I don't know if they would do it. I don't even know if it's on the radar. But I agree with you. Something I joked about the other day, that you could take all three of these guys and hopefully you'd get one tight end, or combine all their stats and you'll get one real tight end, because that's what's going to end up happening, I think, is that they're all going to be injured and things are just going to end up weird. And so we'll see what happens there.
Although the potential, if they end up getting short on tight ends, that'll mean more Andre Ellington, because they'll use him more out in the offensive receiver. So that could play, I know that's not what Arians likes to do, but that could play to our favor in the end.
Yeah, that's true. And something to watch is, you know, with the fact that they'll probably all be injured eventually during the season based on their past, that's definitely something we can probably assume is going to happen shortly here. So as far as Cromartie goes, I tweeted out yesterday as kind of like a warning. The signing is not as important as others are trying to make it to be. So I think the only importance of the signing to me is that he's a veteran, and they're really, really young in the secondary, and that's a really bad spot to be really young, especially if you're going to draft a safety as well and maybe draft a cornerback as well. All of a sudden, you know, Patrick Peterson's kind of your senior guy. I know Rashad Johnson's older and been back there longer, but he has less snap time and doesn't really do as much. So, you know, I talked to a couple people, and they made it sound like Cromartie's looking for one more big deal. He's 30. You know, he's got a bad hip, so he could kind of go at any time. And so he's kind of looking for that kind of one more get some money out of it type deal. I wouldn't be shocked to see him sign with the Cardinals on a one-year prove-it deal, have a great season, and then, you know, pull a Carlos Dansby and go get some more money. But I don't think it's going to happen personally. And honestly, if it happened, great. If it doesn't happen, it, you know, there's other options that I would have preferred already that have signed, but there's still some other options out there.
Yeah, and actually, when you bring it up, it sounds almost like that he's going through the Dansby process, because the Cardinals reached out to Dansby after he'd had some talks with other teams. And after he molded over, that's when he decided, hey, Arizona makes the most sense. It's about the same amount of money. But the fact that I already don't have to buy anything, I don't have to buy a house, I don't have to buy the cars, I don't have to pay to move because I have everything over there. All right, I'll go over there. It sounds like Cromartie's shopping himself around, seeing what's out there, and he's enough of a quality player where it sounds like Hines not doing the take it or leave it type thing, where he's letting Cromartie, hey, he's got enough credibility to play things out, or they've got another game plan. But let's move on to the players of the contracts. That's probably one of the things that we have been that's been talked about the most on the site and among the Arizona Cardinals community, is the types of deals that the Cardinals have been doing. So let's go over the players and their contracts, give them a grade, A through F, and based on A, you can explain how you want, because of the quality of the player or the quality of the contract. Let's start with Valdir. They picked up Valdir, 5 years, $35 million, and for... I don't think you can give that move anything less than an A, because you got a talent at least equal to a guy like Brandon Albert for less money, and he's younger, and he fits what you want to do. I don't think you can give anything less than an A on that deal, because he ended up spending less. They spent less than what we thought they were going to have to spend on a tackle. What about you?
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think the one concern, and you talked about it earlier, was the tricep, and it's his left tricep, which is, you know, important against speed rushers, and you have a couple of those guys in the division, in case you guys didn't know, so that is a slight concern. But the one thing I didn't like about the contract, and I kind of talked about it earlier, was that they pushed a lot of that money into year 2 and 3, so it's like this year is not a big deal, nothing's, you know, really there, but then next year, God forbid something happened, all of a sudden it's you know, it's a catastrophe and you're stuck with him for contract wise but I think that's just, you know, at that point, you know, nitpicking. I understand the reason they did it, because they wanted to keep money free for more additions in free agency, so I completely understand it. But that's just a personal thing. I'm a fan of front-loaded money, get it out of the way soon so you can cut losses as soon as possible instead of back-loaded money. But that's, again, that's just me in terms of, you know, everything else. So
take a look at John Carlson. He got 2 years, $3.2 million, however, only $100,000 in guaranteed money. So we look at that. It's a potential for a well-paid tight end, but there's almost zero risk. Even though I'm not sold on John Carlson, the player, I don't like the addition and how it looks on the tight end room, because the deal, the way it is, I give it a B. What about you?
I think you can give it a C or an incomplete. And the reason you can give it an incomplete is because if they don't make, I think it all depends on what they do. If they do not make another move with the tight ends, I think it's a C, because it's troublesome that you would think it's okay to have that tight end room, as you put it. You know, that's just a walking injured reserve list right there. That's, so I think at So you can either go an incomplete or I'd say a C for now, and then once, you know, the draft happens or free agency continues, even though there's really no other tight ends that they can afford that will have any type of impact, I think you can change that. But I think as it sits right now, I'd give it a C just because I don't like the way the room looked. And even though the contract is fine, I'm worried that this may be – they may just say, okay, we have our tight end grouping. Let's move on to other positions.
We got Jay Feely signing for 1 year, $1.02 million, just a shade over $1 million. However, zero signing bonus. He will get a $65,000 roster bonus if he makes the team, if he's on the roster week one, when salary is guaranteed. So he'll get $65,000 for making the roster. If they cut him, Matt Kevin kind of can't. It doesn't cost the Cardinals a single dime. Even though there's some question about Feely, I'm giving that deal an A. Because, one, it makes him prove it. Two, there's zero risk. And when on a team that you want to win now, you don't want to be relying on some young big leg that you haven't seen prove it in games. And while Feely wasn't great down the stretch, he was great. He was really good on the road. And so while he's older, he doesn't do great on kickoffs, the deal itself and the fact that he will – You see some really good things from Feely, and then every once in a while you're just like, ugh. But that's how kickers go, and he's not a premier kicker, and it's on a one-year deal. I'm giving that deal an A.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. You just, you know, it's cheap if you keep him. It's cheap if you cut him. So it's fine. It is what it is. There's no risk involved. Is basically so you have to give that an A.
Matt Shaughnessy, 2 years, $4.4 million is being reported. What's your take on that? I know you like the signing. Do you like the signing for the amount of money?
Yeah, because I thought they were going to have to put up over three to keep him. So to get him for 2.2, theoretically, if they just do 2 years at the same price, is a huge, huge get for them. And I think that it really, you know, again, continuation of the defensive success, and it's cheap, and you know, we'll see what the guaranteed money is, but quite frankly, even if the entire contract was guaranteed, I wouldn't have a problem with it because it's just such a if he's as effective against the run the next 2 years as he was this year, then it's kind of stealing.
Good job. I like that. Now, I would give it a B plus. I don't know if I give it an A, maybe A minus, B plus, only because of the glut of players there, especially if they want to, they potentially have players behind him that could do the same thing perhaps for, now, he is the better run stuffer, but because of his size and his lack of speed of position, he doesn't provide as much of the flexibility in the pass rush when you might be able to get a little more in the pass rush and near the same production in the running game from a guy, perhaps Sam Acho, perhaps Alex Okafor. I'll downgrade it to a B-plus there. Frosty Rucker, 2 years, $2.145, under $2.25 million. I believe it's like $495,000 guaranteed money. That, again, for me, that's one of the key signings. It's an A deal. He's productive. He's professional. And he gives you good depth there. I give that, I'll give it an A minus. Ideally, at that age, there's some risk at his age of declining. But a little over $1 million per year, but that's a little bit more than what the league minimum is.
And I'm fine with that. I think, like you said, it's slightly over the league minimum. I think I, in my article, said 2 years, $2 million or so. I think that's just right at what he needed to be at, so it's good.
Ted Larson, he is at 2 years and, oh, give me a second, 2 years, $2.6 million, including $470,000 in guaranteed money. You don't like the addition? Adding to the fact where you've got the deal with it, the money with it, well, how do you grade that?
It's probably a C, only because my one concern is that, you're basically paying him in guaranteed money slightly more than what Paul Fanica's contract was. So you either need to cut Fanica or he needs to really work out as a solid swingman backup. Obviously, best case scenario is he doesn't even play, so would it really matter? But I think overall he's it's a fine signing. It'll serve its purpose, I'm hoping.
I think it's a little bit on the expensive side for a guy that who potentially is going to be the backup, but because he is potentially could be a starter, it's money well spent. I would give it about a C as well, simply because I haven't hated any of the deals so far. We'll go to Jonathan Dwyer. you're not a fan of the signing. His contract isn't much. He gets Dwyer's. It is $795,000 with a $65,000 signing bonus. Adding that number in there, what is your grade for that?
I think that's a. Again, it's kind of like Carlson's. It's just dependent on what it does to the running back room. If this means a guy like Alphonso Smith is out, then I'm, you know, curious as to why. If this means a guy like Ryan Williams is out and that they draft another young back, then I'm fine with it. I just don't want, again, kind of like with the John Carlson thing, I don't want the room to stay as is unless they're going to actually let Ryan Williams run. And that's a lot of, you know, ifs involved in everything. But that's how I feel about it. It's basically no money, so it really, in the end, doesn't matter. And I talked to somebody today, and they said there's honestly a chance that he doesn't even make the roster because it's such little guaranteed money that if, you know, he doesn't put up what Arians is expecting of him still, then he'll just, you know, let him go, and it's really no loss at all. So I don't think it's a bad signing. But I'd give it probably like a C+ for now.
I couldn't give it anything higher than really a C because other than what he's worth, I mean, the player, he's potentially just a fourth string guy, got to have in the locker room, in the running back room. But I don't have any problem with it. It's not a lot of money, so it's kind of like, there you got that. We've got, who's the other guy? They got, let's look at, John Carlson talked about Marcus Bernard as a re-signing. They bring back Marcus Bernard for $740,000. They didn't tender him as a restricted free agent, so they didn't have to pay him the $1.2 or $1.3 million for the same round tender, which he was undrafted. So it was just it was more money than you wanted to pay him. At $740,000, I give that a B because they liked what he did. They threw him in there in some nickel packages. He did show a little bit of ability to rush the passer. How about you?
You know, on this one, I'm going to give it a C because you kind of used it for your Shaughnessy reasoning earlier, and I use it for this one because it's why are you signing more linebackers? I understand that every single one of them got hurt this year, but why continue to sign more? And I don't know what his guarantee was. I don't even know if you know what his guarantee was.
No signing bonus at all, actually.
Okay,
well, unless the money came out of... So it potentially, a complete wash, but that might have just been that the bonus had not been reported.
And so, you know, if he's just a signing to get to the draft and through the draft and eventually cut, then that's fine. But as you said, I'm just higher on Shaughnessy as a player, so that's why. But I don't see the reason to have a $750,000 cap hit on a guy when you could use that money elsewhere to maybe pick up another tackle that, you know, you don't have right now.
Jake Ballard, he signed again. Who's another restricted free agent who was not tendered? They got him for $795,000, with a $65,000 signing bonus. Because of his upside, because you've seen him produce in the league, and all reports were that coaching staff absolutely loved him when he came over, when they signed him late in the season, I give that a B plus, because it is the, I think it's the highest upside of that tight end room because of his ability in the, because he does, is a better blocker than the other guys, and he has been productive down the field before. He does add an addition to the offense if you're a true tight end that kind of do it all.
Yeah, and for that reason, I'm actually going to give it a lower grade. I like the move, so don't take this the wrong way, everybody, but I think that because he was a restricted free agent, because you controlled him, why not offer him a multi-year deal? Not anything extravagant, not with any huge guarantees, but why not try to lock him up for 2 years, maybe even three, probably not three, but 2 years, and get 2 years out of him? I worry that eventually these one-year kind of prove-it deals are going to burn the Cardinals.
Because they go elsewhere?
Yeah, and so that's probably my only concern about that. I like the signing overall. I think you probably could have gotten them for something like 2 years and, you know, 1.8 or 2 million and guaranteed just the first year of it with a team option for year two, and everybody would have been happy with that because he could have gotten a chance to prove it and get more money in as well. But other than that, I like the signing, so I'd give it like a B minus, but the minus would be for the fact that I would have preferred to have him maybe another additional year, simply because I do think he has talent, and I'm concerned that this is eventually, you know, kind of the kind magic of working these one-year deals is going to run out.
I do see that happening, Sum. I don't think it's so much as this, the magic of the play, as it is the more and more money comes available. Last year was one of the really good year to start as a GM because the market for veterans was tight. The salary cap was flat, and so he was able to do, hey, here's a deal. If you walk out the door, we're going to give the deal to somebody else. And so there was a lot of pressure of these players to sign on the dotted line because there wasn't a lot of cap space. Money's hitting the market. They had a $10 million this year. They're expecting to see another $10 million in the next couple of years as well. There's going to be more and more TV money. Kime's not going to be able to play shrewd general manager with the free agency, except for maybe depth guys. So hopefully the plan is hopefully they're picking up their starters in the draft, and they're drafting well, because I think that magic only works in a flat market when it's no longer that seller's market where the players get to pick and choose when they get where they go. The new players affected the rotation. We'll talk a little bit about who you got. What do you see happen on the offensive line? The left side we know is kind of set. You can plug in Valdir, Cooper, Senline, and now you've got potential for some competition there on the right side at right guard and at right tackle. At right guard right now you've got Paul Fonica, you've got Ted Larson, you've got Earl Watford as your main guys. Maybe add Bradley Sowell into the mix. But I think he's going to be more in play at right tackle, where you've got Nate Potter, Bobby Massey, and then Sowell. How do you see that playing out right now, or that competition? What's your take on the competition at those two positions, assuming that no other player gets that? In fact, I think it's going to be highly likely that they bring back Eric Winston. I would not be surprised at that at all, as we're kind of jumping ahead in the players and positions we might see in the weeks to come. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see Winston back as well and kind of plug him in, because as you've noted, as we've seen, coaching staff does not seem real sold on Bobby Massey. I think the only way he makes the team this year, he has to win the starting job outright, because he's not going to be a good bench guy, at least for the offensive line, when you only dress 7 or 8 a game, because he doesn't play multiple positions. And you've got a guy like Sowell, Sowell and Potter both can play on both sides of the line, who can play guard and tackle. As of today, I'd pick Bradley Sowell to be the starting right tackle, just because of variance. How do you see that probably playing out over the next few months?
I think the biggest thing is if they're going to have Watford play, then really, really, really need to find a veteran right tackle. Because I think you're having Veldheer in year one of Arian's offense coming off a major injury. You're having Cooper in year one of his career coming off a major injury. Then you have Lyle Sendline, who's kind of the old, you know, guard, which is why I don't think he's going to go anywhere. Then you have potentially Watford or Larson. Larson's kind of a, you know, I've talked about it, but he is a veteran, but it's his first year in the Arians offense. He's not a great run blocker. And then, you know, Watford, it'll be his first year playing at all, any game time, and he's coming from a small school. So I think if you went Sowell at right tackle, I think you could be exposing yourself to a lot of problems on the right side altogether, because you're going to have Sowell, who seems to understand the position but just physically struggles to get things done, versus a guy like Bobby Massey, who's physically imposing but seems that he can't grasp the concepts of what the Cardinals want to do. So I think overall what you're looking at is you really need to find a veteran presence that can lock down that side for maybe one or two more years and let Watford get his feet wet in the NFL, or Larson get his bearings in Arian's offense before bad things kind of happen. You know, if we're just talking about who's on the roster, I think you're right. I think it's going to be Sowell, and I think we're going to see a line, if they don't bring anybody in, of Veldheer, Cooper, Sendline, Watford, and Sowell. And while I have very high hopes for Watford, that him teaming with Sowell on the right side really does scare me for his development and his future.
I can see what you mean by that. Let's look at the running back room. You've got Stephon Taylor, Andre Ellington, Ryan Williams, and now Jonathan Dwyer. They've got this kid Michael Hughes, who basically been a practice squad player. He's a big dude. I think it'll be Taylor Ellington. And I've been on the record as saying, well, I think Ellington's going to get the most touches. I'm not sure he'll get the most carries. I'm not sold on that yet. At the running back position, I think they'll use a lot of two backs, or they bring him out wide, or just line him straight up as a receiver. And so it'll be a case of, is it going to be Dwyer? Is it going to be Williams? Is it going to be Taylor? I think Ryan Williams is kind of in a situation where he's going to have to prove it. He's going to have to prove that he's the guy coming out of camp. If not, he's going to say sayonara. Despite what Steve Keim wants him on the team, I don't think he's not going to be able to just hold him on the roster this year like he did last year. Unless Williams does that, which who knows if he can, because he's shown the moves on the practice field, the type of running they want, they got Taylor and they got Dwyer, both kind of in the between the tackle guys. I see Dwyer being the guy to start off, and Taylor coming on, taking a greater role as the year goes on. What about you?
I think you're right, and I think if they're fortunate enough to have Ryan Williams get his mind, you know, not to steal John Lott's words, but get his mind right and be ready to play in the NFL, I think they'll luck into a situation where they have a dynamic running duo in Williams and Ellington. If not, I think it's going to be a very similar running game to 2013, where you're going to see a lot of Dwyer and then Taylor between the tackles, and then a lot of Andre Ellington getting limited touches for big yards, and Dwyer and Taylor kind of doing their 3 yards in a cloud of dust dance. I'm hoping that with the Veldheer signing that we're going to see more of a power run game this year, with Cooper back as well, and a more effective power run game. But again, you're talking about two injured players that have never played together in a new offense. So, you know, I think expectations should be tempered, but they also, they're going to be good, hopefully.
look at the wide receiver position. Now you've got Ted Ginn. Are we going to see much of Jerron Brown? Are we going to even see Brenton Golden or Teddy Williams? Are we going to see those guys? I can't imagine that, but I don't think. I think we're going to see two things. I think we've seen the end of Patrick Peterson on offense, and I think we won't see a whole lot of those other players, especially if Ginn stays healthy, because between Floyd, Fitz, Ginn, and Ellington, I think that's the group that you're going to see at receiver.
Yeah, and I think Ellington's going to be the third wide receiver. Ginn's kind of be the fourth wide receiver. I think when Arian spoke at the beginning of the year, he kind of alluded to the fact that they want to get Ellington more touches, but not in the sense of as a running back. So I think that's what we'll see him as, is more of a split-out Darren Sproles type player. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. And then we'll go from there and see what happens. I think you're going to see some really, you're expecting another jump from Floyd. He had a nice statistical season, but I think you want to see more consistency and not, I think it was, five or six games making up, 70% of those yards. You'll want to see, a consistent, 80 yard,
80 to 130 type games, yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to, having games where he's at 30 yards or 20 yards and is basically Andre Roberts as opposed to Michael Floyd. For Fitz, he's going to be there. The question is going to become, do they draft somebody else? And like you said, Brenton Golden, Jerron Brown, I think, makes the roster as the type, the fifth wide receiver. Brenton Golden, and is Teddy Williams still on the roster?
He is.
Okay,
They have him under control this year. I know they left Dante Moko, but Teddy Williams is there if they want to keep him just for special teams.
Yeah, so I think they're all kind of gone now. And they may draft somebody late or early, who knows, with Arian's infatuation with speedy wide receivers. So, but I think we're going to see, I think those will be your top five, barring a draft pick, and then that'll change the dynamic a little bit.
So let's look at the players and positions we might see in the weeks to come. Obviously, there's really kind of two holes that are left, and that would be corner depth, since they all but let Antoine Kaysen go. Javier Arenas is gone. And we've got the injury to Tyrann Mathieu. So you've got holes at corner, and then you don't really have a real set safety situation. They haven't addressed safety at free agency yet. So what could we see in the weeks to come? I predict Eric Winston probably will be back. I would not be surprised at it at all, that they're going to let things play out. I think Eric Winston comes back in the end if he doesn't get any interest elsewhere. The way things are looking right now, I would almost put money on Jeremiah Bell coming back as well, since we haven't seen any interest in the team, and at the least in reports, even talking to safeties. The Cromartie deal wouldn't surprise me, but I expect another corner. I expect a corner to be signed in free agency, at least someone for depth. And then I expect Jeremiah Bell and Eric Winston to be back. Those would be the players I think we'll see in the weeks to come and months to come, just down the line, just because of the veteran situation that they're in.
And at least we'll have people that we know that they're going to yell at back, so we won't have to learn their names or anything. I think as far as Winston goes, they made a call on Austin Howard from the Jets and found out what his price was going to be, so they kind of backed off that. I think they want a right tackle. I don't know if they're in on anybody, to be honest with you, because whenever I try to ask anybody, they kind of stonewall me, which is fine at this point because they're still trying to work, respectable, cheap, you don't want to say cheap, but cheap deal where they can, team beneficial deals that they seem to have been able to get from everybody far. So it would not shock me if Eric Winston is back after they maybe gauge interest on some other guys and find out that the price tag is going to be too high. As for corner. I think they want to bring in a corner and a safety. So, yeah, right, Yermak Bell will probably come back, because I think what they're going to end up doing is they're going to end up signing either a safety, a corner, or a right tackle, and then whoever they don't sign, they're just going to bring back the guys they already have. So I wouldn't be shocked to see a guy like Bell back. I wouldn't be shocked to see a guy like Winston back. And quite frankly, I wouldn't, you know, be shocked to see a guy like Antoine Kayson back if they end up signing maybe, you know, Chris Clemens safety, or a Nate Allen as the safety, and then bring back a Antoine Kayson just so they have somebody, you know, with experience in what Bowles is doing in the mix as well. Same thing. I think they sign one more, I don't want to say big agent, but I think they sign one more, you know, starter free agent type, or, you know, as a cornerback. I'll say starter over Gerard Powers, and then we'll see what they do from there. I think, like you said, they'll bring back the other guys that they end up don't signing a new player at.
Now, one last question before we part for the evening. This actually comes in via Ez for Prez, one of the readers on RevengeOfTheBirds.com. He called in on my phone number on our Revenge of the Birds voicemail, and he had a twofold question. One, he asked about Rolando McClain, the troubled linebacker who had issues in Oakland, didn't make the team, and all intents and purposes, according to what it is, he retired. Would you be interested in Rolando McClain on a one-year prove-it deal? And then the second question, dealing with the draft, but we'll go ahead and ask it. If you had a choice between tight end Jason Morrow or Justin Gilbert, the cornerback, which way you go? I'm going to say, when it comes to McClain, not only no, but hell no, because of, well, one, just he's had too many issues, and we already have a player in Darrell Washington who, while he's got some issues to work through, we don't want to add that in the just production. I mean, he hasn't played football in too long, and while he's young, I don't want to add that to the team. When it comes to Morrow or Gilbert, I'll defer to you on that, as I still have to do more work. You are more of our draft guy. What would you say, yay or nay to McClain?
Absolutely not. And only because if you can't function within the Raiders organization that allows so much stuff to go on, that's so dysfunctional, I don't know how you're going to function in a more tightly run and tightly knit group. I honestly could see like Darnell Dockett and he getting in a fist fight or something like that. So I'm with you. No. As far as Gilbert or Morrow, it really just depends on your point of view of this draft. Morrow, for me, I like him. I just don't like him at 20. I don't like Ebron at 20. I don't like any tight end at 20, because I don't think that they are important enough in the offense, and they're not going to get enough touches. And if they are getting enough touches, that means guys like Floyd, Ellington, and Fitzgerald aren't getting enough touches. So give me a guy in the second or third round. As far as Justin Gilbert goes, the way I describe Gilbert is that he's an athlete that doesn't understand how to play football yet. He has some really bad technique issues. He just was absolutely destroyed in the intermediate area of the field, and I worry that bringing in a guy that has flaws that are correctable but are really glaring, you know, opposite a guy like Patrick Peterson, who's one of the top, you know, five cornerbacks in the NFL, is going to stunt his growth, because he's going to just get picked on mercilessly early on in his career, and so it's going to be a really expedited type of learning curve. And so, you know, if you're making me pick between those two, I'd probably take Gilbert, because he plays the more important position at a he's a better player at a premium position, so to speak. So I think that would be it. But I'd have no problem with either pick. They just wouldn't. They're not necessarily my cup of tea right now.
Well, thank you, Seth, and Revenge. Those of you who are listening to the live, thank you for listening live. If you are listening via download, please continue to listen. Find us on RevengeOfTheBirds.com, on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, and right here on BlogTalkRadio.com as well. I'd like to thank Seth, as always, for coming on. Thank you. Have a wonderful night. It's always a pleasure having you on as one of our regulars. Seth, thanks for coming on tonight.
Oh, no problem, Jess. I appreciate it, and I look forward to more off-season and the draft coming up in 7 weeks.
And we'll be talking more draft in the weeks to come. Thanks for listening. You'll find us. Keep on talking on RevengeOfTheBirds.com. This will be up on the site. And good night, Cardinals fans. You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at Facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.
It's summer when all people want to talk about is the weather. How seasonable it is, especially for this time of year. How incredibly mild. How typical. How it's finally come around. And how actually, now that it is here, it's all just a bit too much. We don't mind it hot, but not this hot. You also know it's summer when you can grab yourself a frozen strawberry lemonade. Tangy iced lemon mixed with a sweet strawberry swirl. $1.99 from the McCafe Iced Range at McDonald's. Served until the 11th of October, subject to availability. Price of participation may vary.